Is there something keeping you from being honest with yourself? How do you forgive yourself and others? What is your vision? And are the choices you're making every day aligning with that vision? Do you want to learn how to love yourself, ugly bits and all? If your answer is yes, and you're ready to learn and grow with us, welcome to You Already Are. Right, welcome to You Already Are. I am your host, Alyssa Carlson. This is my co-host,
Michael Gardner. Good to be here.
We are excited. We've got a lot of great topics today that we would love to share. And Michael, you were saying something about being offended, something you and Kathy had talked about, being offended.
Yeah, in the whole topic of journey to peace or journey to inner peace, one of the barriers is being offended. And we live in a society that seems to be very, very offended, what some people would call being triggered. And as long as we are in a space where we choose to be offended by anything, we're not going to find sustaining peace. We may find temporary, but not sustaining.
Yeah, I want to expand on that. When you said being offended by anything, I just started thinking about like being offended by the environment or being offended by like other people's choices. Like, oh, I'm offended that person smoking next to me because I have a baby, or I'm offended that you would drive a truck instead of an electric car, things like that. Can you give more examples of like being offended by everything, not just what somebody says to you, but your environment?
Yeah. Well, the political opinions obviously is one. Talk about the little things. Sometimes a spouse can say something to a spouse that is innocent, but it touches on a nerve with the other one and they become offended. They choose to be offended. And it is a choice. It is a choice. And now then it escalates into an argument. For example, somebody was complimenting their wife on the dinner. And I don't remember the exact wording, but they said something about it. And the wife took it as, well, are you saying it wasn't good enough? But from there, it escalated into not a discussion, but where one was defending himself and she was attacking them. Then he started attacking her and she started attacking him. And it was all from a comment of, well, okay, I'll give you an example. I used to use this in training. Let's say you meet the man of your dreams, Alyssa, which you have, and you guys are just so blissfully happy. And then one morning you wake up and you see him in the bathroom and he's not doing anything special. He's brushing his teeth. But you notice that he did it wrong. He squoze the toothpaste from the middle. And in your family, we always squoze it from the end. And so you go in to gently kind of nudge him and say, Remy, you're brushing your teeth. I just want to point out something. You did it wrong. Boom, there's the trigger. Wrong. Now, I'm not saying he would react this way, but then he's like, well, my family's always squoze it from the middle. What's wrong with my family? And it goes from squeezing the toothpaste into a big argument about who does it better, who's right, who's wrong, because we say a trigger word or this or that, and it seems like a little thing, but it escalates. So we're not going to have peace, and it breeds resentment. And in that situation, I don't know anybody's ever had a big argument about toothpaste. But yeah, there's no peace in that. And so, yeah, as long as we choose to be offended by anything. And, you know, I look at politics today. People, you know, very common to say we are divided as a country. Well, you look at some, and I would say social media has a lot to do with this. Because before social media, we didn't know everything that was going on. But now where everybody can put their voice into everything, it doesn't take much to go from having a different political opinion to an argument. We wonder why we're divided. We're not going to have peace within ourselves in that environment. People can have different opinions. Believe it or not, they do. And if you look at the big world, if we were to hear the points of view of people in Europe or in the Middle East, Boy, we could really be offended because they have some very, very different points of view and very different points of what they consider to be right and wrong. And then we get in the right-wrong game. Well, this is right, this is wrong. So if you were to go to the Middle East, in a lot of places, to go outside, you'd have to cover your head and your face. And, you know, we go, well, that, you know, you could get offended by that. But that's how they are in that culture. So you can be.
And they could be offended by us not doing
absolutely,
that, right?
Absolutely. So who's right? That depends on where you were born.
It's all about perspective.
Absolutely. So if it, you know, the question then becomes, does this work or does it not work for me? So I'm, you know, if it works for you, go live in that society. But if it doesn't, when you go there, just accept that's how things are. And you're not going to change it by insulting them, you know, throwing it in their face. And you know what? It's really not for you to change them, because when you want to go change somebody, you can't have peace because they have all the power. I can't be happy until they change. Well, who has all the power in that? They do.
Yeah, that's a big one. Just expecting your peace to come from somebody else's actions, right? If somebody else, oh, you know, I'll be happy when my husband has a job. I'll be happy when my husband can be the provider of the family or whatever it is. And I know, because my mom had those feelings for a long time towards my dad of just, well, I can't be happy because I have to work full time and my husband doesn't. And it was very painful for them. But yeah, it's just coming to the realization that my happiness doesn't come from somebody else. My happiness comes from inside.
I want to circle back though to offense. When we're offended, it is triggering something in us where we feel inadequate or we don't feel powerful enough to handle it, or it's a fear. It's basically hitting a fear. So if we say, well, you offended me. Let's say I weigh 400 pounds. And there was a time in my life I was going that way. And somebody says, oh, you're fat. And I say, that's offensive. Because why is it offensive? What, did they expose a big secret? You know, is there something that is not? No, but we're not supposed to say that. Well, if I get offended by that, it's because I'm not okay being 400 pounds.
Can I share another example? So I've started going back into musical theater, and constructive criticism is definitely a thing. And you kind of have to be prepared to take that. And I feel like it's very easy, especially if you're a little insecure of yourself, to be offended when somebody tells you, hey, you're not articulating enough, or hey, I don't think you should say your line like that. That's silly, you know? And even in my experience, as I've gone through in the musical that I'm in right now, little examples of people commenting like, oh, hey, you should really work on this, or you should do this. Just little comments from like my director or my fellow cast members. There have been times when I've been faced with that. Am I offended by this? Am I upset by the fact that they want me to do it differently? Or do I just say, okay, just take it as it is, instead of like they're personally attacking me and saying, oh, you know, you're a bad person because you do that. I think that that's what we tend to do, is when somebody gives us feedback or tells us something that we can work on, we tend to take that as, oh, I'm not good enough. Obviously, I did something so wrong. Or I take offense, like, how dare they tell me that I did that wrong? How dare they tell me that I need to articulate? They don't have experience. They don't have, you know, this or that. And they're obviously not hearing me right. And it's just, it's definitely a thing in musical theater. And when you're trying to train yourself in other, like, professional abilities, like my voice coach has often given me feedback that has been very hard to hear. And I've had to take a step back and just take it for what it is. She's not telling me that I'm a bad person and that I'm awful. She's just telling me what she hears, right? And it's her job to do that. But there have been a lot of times that I've been faced with these fears, these insecurities of like, oh, well, she's saying that I don't sound good and therefore I should stop singing and I'm not enough and all of those things, right?
Well, it is hitting a nerve where you feel not good enough. And the nerve is there, and they're just saying something that you interpret as, believe it or not, validation for your belief that you're not good enough. And we like to be validated, so there's some validation. Yeah, you're right, I'm not good enough. It's a consequence. I mean, even look at the, you know, how we tend to want to euphemisms. When you say constructive criticism, that's a sort of a nice way to say honesty. I'm going to be honest with you, but let me put it in these terms so I don't hurt your feelings. I don't have the power to hurt your feelings. You don't have the power to hurt mine. But what is the nerve in you that doesn't feel good enough? Because it's still there. You know, if they don't say it, it's still there. So that's where on the journey to peace, you work on the nerve rather than trying to change that person and say it to me this way.
Or blaming that other person or saying, oh, that person is awful because they said those things about me. They made me feel bad about myself. Right? It's on them. It's not on me.
They're a bad person and they hurt feelings. But what are the feelings that are hurt and why are they hurt? They can't hurt your feelings without your permission because those feelings are already there. We can cover them up. We can bury them. But every once in a while, something comes into play that says, remember this. You don't feel good enough about yourself. So, you know, this is a part of the journey to self-love and to peace. So we're talking about loving myself. I love myself for every part of me, even my insecurities, for what I can learn from them. But why don't I learn from them? Because I keep wanting to push them aside, push them away. I want to be told what I want to hear rather than somebody being honest with me. So I don't work through those issues myself. I cover them up, and I put on rose-colored glasses or a smiley face, whereas inside I don't feel that. So it's a barrier of being offended, and it just hits something that's already there. So if you are driving down the road and you see a boulder, yeah, you go around it, but you also probably call somebody that can move that boulder. So it's not there, and you've got it. Or it's like discovering you have a cancer. What do you do with the cancer? Do you ignore it? Do you bury it? No, you got to cut it out. You got to get rid of it because it's eating away at the beautiful body that we have. You don't ignore it. You deal with it. So you've got to deal with that issue.
I wanted to expand on the thought of dealing with those triggering things. Whatever it is that somebody said that's triggered something for you, dealing with them. So when I first started out with this mindset stuff, and I do it still now, but one of the things that was really difficult for me was I would have these amazing days where I just felt like I was on fire, like time of my life, everything is amazing. And then I have those days where I go back to what I was before. I go back to this, I'm an angry mom, I'm unhappy, it's everybody else's fault, I'm a victim. And there was a time when I had to face something that was really hard for me. I had a really hard day. It was one of the times when Remington was on a business trip and I was really trying to force myself to be positive about the fact that he was on a business trip. And I think I've touched on this a little bit in another podcast, but I originally just all the time was like, oh, when Remington's not here, I'm helpless. Things go wrong. I'm overwhelmed, you know, and I'm angry at him because he's gone. Well, this was during my journey to, you know, finding greater joy. And I decided I'm not going to let that happen. You know, like when he's gone, we're going to have a great time. I can totally do this. 4 kids by myself. I'm fine. It's totally fine. And that was my attitude. But then things weren't fine. Things were not okay. My daughter had a crazy meltdown. And it was hard. It was a hard day for me. And it was really hard for me to stay positive. And I kept getting angry at myself because I wasn't staying positive and it wasn't great and it wasn't fun. You know, I felt overwhelmed and I made some choices that I really regretted. I got very overwhelmed with my daughter when she was throwing a fit. She's 7, almost 8. She's throwing a toddler tantrum. Imagine kicking and screaming and I'm talking for 30 minutes solid. And I had had it. And I had just put my babies down and she was waking them up and I was so angry. And I threw her on the ground at one point because she tried to kick me. And then as I was trying to put her to bed because I knew that she needed a nap, she started screaming at the top of her lungs. And my toddler had just gone down for a nap. My baby was napping And I went in panic mode and I slapped my hand over her mouth and I shoved her against the wall and I was like, you do not get to wake everybody else up. This is a very, I'm being real right now. Like, this is an ugly thing that happened. And I sent her to bed. I let go and I realized I was getting way too intense. Put her in her room and she was screaming and crying for over an hour. And I left. I walked outside. I was like, I can't be here right now. I'm way too invested. And I cried because I was like, I can't believe I just did that to my daughter. I can't believe I just shoved a 7-year-old up against a wall. I felt disgusted. I was like, who is this person? I went spiraling, like, I'm awful. All this hard work that I've been doing to change myself, to become a better person, just went down the drain because I just did that thing. And my mindset coach had been teaching me about parts work. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but it's a therapy used for like psychological issues and depression and things like that. And basically what you do is you go by yourself, you take a stuffed animal or something, a toy, whatever you want, and you kind of put yourself into this stuffed animal and you pretend that this stuffed animal is you and you just stop and listen to what inside of you needs to get out. And so I did that night after I had gone up and held my daughter and I told her I loved her and I talked about what had happened and made sure that she knew that I was so sorry and it should have never happened and that, you know, she means the world to me. Anyways, so I repaired that with her to some degree and then I went by myself and I had this stupid Mickey toy and I looked ridiculous, but I was talking to this Mickey toy as if it was myself and I listened to what I needed. And I listened to that insecure part of me that's saying, you're not a good mom. And what you did was not okay. It was despicable. And I listened to all those things of how I was feeling, kind of like a curious observer of just like, why are you feeling this way? What happened? You know? And then as I was listening to my spirit and listening to what, you know, I was like, what does Alyssa need? I was bawling. I mean, it took me a solid hour or so to get this out. And I was bawling and I finally was just like, you made a mistake. You made a mistake, but that doesn't mean that you're a bad mom. And it doesn't mean you're a bad person. And I was able to kind of talk myself and help myself know that, like, you made a mistake. Guess what? I still love you. Because God still, not even because, but just I still love you. You're okay. And I had to connect to that part where, you know, I know that I'm worth something regardless of the mistakes I've made because I was created, right? I exist and therefore I have worth. And I had to connect to that and the love that I feel I have from my God, right? Because I believe in God. And it could be somebody feels their worth because they exist in the universe or whoever it is you connect with. But for me, it was God. And I realized I have a God that loves me to death, no matter what I've done. That love is not earned. That love is a given. It is something that I couldn't take away no matter what I did. It is there. And I had to connect with that for myself. And I had to say, I love you, Alyssa. I love you. I love all of you, even after you did all that. And let me tell you, Michael, this is a mistake that would have stayed with me for weeks and months, and I would have gone spiraling into depression, thinking about how awful of a mom I was. I'm worthless. My kids don't, you know, deserve a mom like this. My husband deserves somebody so much better, all that stuff, right? But I was able to work through it, and I was able to say, hey, I accept that part of you. I accept that insecurity. And since I've done that, I've been able to take things that have often in the past given me kind of anxiety or trigger of like, you're not enough. And I've been able to stop and think, why are you feeling that way? Talk to me. What's going on? What's happened inside of you? Why is that happening? Why do you feel this way? And then I've been able to redirect and say, well, you don't have to feel that way. You can choose to be okay. You can choose to say, hey, that was feedback that was given to me. And I can either choose to accept it and change or accept it and say, no, I'm good. I don't need to change. But it's one of those, like, I got the chance to work through one of those triggers, work through one of those guilt things that I was very self-conscious about. And I felt so much better. The weeks and months that I would have gone spiraling, the next day I was like, I am a good mom. I'm a good person. I made a mistake. I did. It was ugly. But I love myself regardless of the fact that it was ugly and I made mistakes because I'm imperfect.
So that is forgiveness. To learn from it, you know. Forgiveness doesn't mean that what happened is okay. It means, okay, I'm learning. And you may do this again, Alyssa. We're all in the journey and we're learning. So it could happen again. But the more you are aware of what's going on in you when that happens, the more you will do it less until you don't do it at all. But it really ties into forgiveness. And forgiveness is getting out of the judgment of it. So realizing I did what I did, but getting out of the judgment would say, okay, if you judge it as despicable, then you're in judgment and you really cannot see it for what it is because you're judging it. You just see it for what it is. This is what I did. Does it work for me? How does that feel? That's not what I want to create with my daughter. So what am I learning? And this ties into something else we kind of talked about before. I was thinking about this today. People don't necessarily change anything they do because it's wrong or despicable or bad. Like somebody can smoke for years and say, I know it's wrong, and they're still puffing away. But why don't they quit? Because that cigarette is real to them and it gives them a momentary pleasure or a momentary relief. So what you were doing with your daughter was trying to give yourself a momentary relief from her screaming. Okay, so if you look at it that way, you know, you don't want to do that again, obviously, but you will. You'll probably do something like that again, and you're not going to hurt her or anything like that. But it's because we don't have a vision, or we have a vision, but the momentary release is more real than our vision. So I've worked with people that were involved with addictions, specifically pornography. And they're like, I know I shouldn't do it, blah, blah, blah. But that doesn't stop them from doing it. And they get the shame of family and things like that. But what causes them to shift is having a vision where pornography doesn't fit into that vision. So instead, if you're a smoker and you want to quit, I know it's wrong, I shouldn't do it, it's unhealthy, but I still smoke. Why? Because I don't have a vision of health. But once I get a real vision of health, smoking doesn't fit into that, and we'll naturally find our temptation to do that in a reactive way for a momentary relief, because that's what you were trying to do, get a relief from her screaming. And the way you went about it was a way that didn't work, or maybe it worked for a moment, but long term, you don't want to do that. But then you look at, what do I really want with my daughter? And what's the vision? And you got to make that real. That's where, to me, visualization comes in. I got to visualize and to the point where I see, feel, taste what it is I'm visualizing. Like when I was heavy, I never got to 400 pounds. I got to 320, which was, to me, grossly overweight. One of the things I did was I had a vision of myself thinner and healthier. So when I was tempted to eat things that didn't fit into that, I found my desire for them wasn't there. It was hard at first because I could not see myself at the weight I'm at. I could not see that, but I kept visualizing until that became as real as the hamburger or the fries or whatever it was that was tempting. And when that was as or more real, then I really had a choice. I can eat the hamburger and fries, or I can be this. So when you're looking at a situation like that, and you know, at first it's a very, very conscious way of thinking, okay, what do I want here? I want my daughter and me to have blah, blah, blah. She's screaming, you know. But when you step away, because maybe that didn't work what you did, according to you, right? I'm assuming it didn't work.
Right. Yeah. No, we had a very hard conversation afterwards. Yeah.
What is it I want with my daughter? And does this fit into that? And you start to see what you really, you know, loving, honest relationship. Okay, that doesn't fit. And over time, you naturally, your actions naturally change. So let me throw this at you. What if there's a book It was popular at one time, called Parenting with Love and Logic.
Ah, I've heard of this book. I had my son's kindergartner teacher. She's trained in love and logic.
Yes, I'm going to put my down because she needs a nap. But she wasn't tired. No, you needed a rest from her. Probably more accurately, I want a rest. Okay, so you know, because maybe she didn't need a nap. I don't know. My mother used to have me take naps. I never took a nap. I do now, but I never did back then when I was a kid. She would say, "You got to go take a nap," and I'd lay there in bed going, "How long do I have to lay here?" I remember it. And then after a while, I'd start going, my mother said, "All right, get up." But I never went to sleep. So maybe it wasn't that she needed a nap. What you required, what you wanted, was a little bit of a rest time with the kids down. And there she is interrupting that. So were there other possibilities? Could you had her go do something quietly somewhere else or something like that? I mean, I don't know. I'm not, you know, I'm just saying, when you have a vision for what you want, the way you deal with things, they don't deal with you, you deal with them. So if she's screaming and crying, it's like, oh, maybe she's not ready to go down for a nap. So
she went down for a nap because of the tantrum. Because she was screaming and crying. Not because she didn't have a tantrum because I told her to take a nap. She had a tantrum because I asked her to do something she didn't want to do. And then it was like, I think you're tired. I think you need to go take a nap. I promise, Michael, I was calm for a solid 15 minutes through that screaming and crying. And then I had it.
I don't know if I told you this before. I was the best parent there ever was till I had kids. I could always tell people how to do it right. My first two kids were adopted from abusive families. And so I felt like God was saying, okay, you're so good. Take these kids. And they were, you know, coming from abusive families, they were a challenge. And I will also tell you this, I might have said this before. For a long time, I was like, well, why me? I'm a good guy. We adopted these kids. We love them. Well, why do I get all this with these kids? And then I shifted to, well, why me? Why did God trust me with these kids? Start asking it from that perspective. And then you have it's like, oh, maybe there's something in me.
It's that lesson that we talk about is, well, okay, I'm being challenged right now. What's the lesson in my challenge, right?
Yeah. What is it about me that I'm powerful enough to deal with this?
I like that.
Yeah, that's a great little story, though, that you shared. Thank you for being vulnerable.
I think the only reason why I was able to share it was because I've been able to make peace with it. Mm-hmm. I was able to work through it and say that doesn't define me. That doesn't define who I am. I just feel like we as a people tend to define ourselves by what's happened to us, by what we've experienced, right? But that's not who we are. That's something that's happened, but that's not who we are. There was a beautiful devotional last night. One of the speakers talked about using the power and the gift of forgiveness for ourselves and for others, but for ourselves, and realizing and saying, the past is not going to determine my future. The past is not going to determine who I am. And I'm sure that, Michael, you've probably experienced many people who have gone through very traumatic experiences or who have caused traumatic experiences for others and have changed and have been able to move on and have been able to forgive themselves and be able to say, that's not going to define who I'm going to be.
Yeah. And a common thing that people say is, my experiences in my life haven't broken me. They've made me who I am. I'm going to say that's not true. They've assisted you to discover who you are. They don't make you. Either way, if I have a traumatic experience one way, it doesn't define me either as bad or good. I already am who I am. You already are. You're already there. It assists you to discover that I was powerful enough. I am powerful enough to get through that. And you look at experiences where you didn't think you were powerful enough to get through it, and then you did. So you discovered that you're more powerful than you believe. The experience itself was just the tool. any experience in our life is a tool for us to discover who we are. Here's one of the problems, though. Let's say something traumatic happens. And I would tell people, look, the experiences come to support you in discovering what you want to discover about yourself. Challenges, sometimes they come in a way and people go, I didn't want it to come that way. Well, I'm going to tell you, if you trust the universe or God or whatever, apparently they know more than we do about what's good for us, what will assist us, and what will be the perfect way for us to learn that lesson. A lot of times we think we know better and we try to do it on our own, and then we end up lost or empty because we don't know better. But so how an experience comes is not up to us. I'm saying specifically, like if you want to know you're more powerful, okay, I'm sending out an order to the restaurant that I want this for my meal. Well, it's going to come. There is going to be an experience or two or three or 10 that will support me in learning that about myself. But then it comes, it's like, well, I don't want it to come that way. And so we try to avoid it and we try to run from it, but it keeps coming and the lessons keep coming up. But the point, going back to the original point, they don't define who we are. They help us to discover who we are, who and what we are. That we're powerful beings. I believe we're beings of light and love, total purity. So whatever I've done doesn't damage that. It covers it up. So if I've done something horrible, Hitler, okay, let's stretch here. Hitler is a divine human being made of love and light. May have covered it up quite a bit, but in his purity and in forgiveness, I believe we got to see that in him. He is what he was. He just forgot it. And, you know, some people can get triggered by that, but I will tell you what, if you're triggered by that, look at yourself and what are the areas of your life that you're not willing to forgive and why? Because they are covering up what you are, who you are. And if you don't forgive you, I mean, forget about Hitler. I mean, that's a big stretch for a lot of people. Oh, yeah, I get it. He did some things that weren't good. But okay, take that to yourself. And what are areas of my own life that I think are unforgivable? Or, you know, I can't let go of it and such. When I can see that in me, then I can start to see the purity and the light and the love of everyone, even those I think are horrible people. It's not for me to judge them. I'll let somebody much more wise do that. It's for me to see their purity and support them in discovering that for themselves.
There is something my mind tune coach talks about is your essence and hanging on to your essence and letting go of everything else, but hang on to your essence. So he kind of talks about that. We are infinite beings. We have infinite potential. And when you hang on to that, you hang on to that infinite worth, you start to realize that the things that have happened to you, we don't like that, but the things that have happened to you, the things that you have chosen to do that may have not been what you wanted, they weren't who you want to be, they're not who you are, right? Those things that have happened, those things that you've chosen to do, they're not who you are. And it turns out that they don't have to be who you are in the future either, right? Like you can choose something different. And that's the power of being accountable and being responsible, is being able to realize I did make all those choices. I am miserable because of the choices I've made. And realizing, well, that's not going to define who I'm going to be. That happened. Okay. I accept and love myself. And I say, you know, that's not who I am. That was something I chose and I made a mistake, but I can choose something different. And that's power. Saying that, accepting the fact that, hey, you're miserable because you're choosing to be miserable. Ah, what a slap in the face. Ouch, that hurts, right? But saying, well, if it's my choice to feel this way, if it's my choice to be miserable, I could choose something different. I can choose happiness. I can choose joy. I can choose peace. But it's willing, you have to be willing to accept that you're in control of that rather than passing it off to somebody or something else and saying, well, because that happened to me or because that person is this way, I can't find happiness. Well, you can. You are responsible for your own unhappiness now, which means the amazing thing, you can be responsible for the happiness that you feel in the future.
And I differentiate happiness from joy too, because sometimes when you're dealing with your kids, you don't feel happy. But that's part of the joy, the overall bigger picture of what you're creating.
Almost like inner peace. Like you just have peace. Like I may not be happy all the time, like happy, I'm laughing, I'm smiling all the time, but I have peace. I'm at peace with my life and myself, right?
Yeah, right. I've had people say, tell me I'm intense, but I love what I do, like in this kind of thing. And yeah, I get a little intense, I guess, but there's joy in this. You know, when I was working with people who were going through the release process of whatever they've experienced, you know, sexual abuse or getting, you know, screwed over by a business partner, or whatever, is the worst pain they could imagine anybody ever having. By the way, one of the things that stops our peace is my pain is bigger than yours. Now, pain is pain, and we all have it, and we all experience it the same. Mine is worse than yours. I can tell you I have met people with all kinds of pain, and to them, there is nothing worse, and they were very different pain. But anyway, the joy of it is in going through that. I'm not sitting there going, ha, 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 ha. Had that happened? Oh, boy. No, of course not. I'm just, my job is to work them through it. And, you know, even though they're sharing horrible things, what we'd call horrible. You know, I remember just listening to people and going, I can't believe somebody would do that to a kid. You know, some of the horrible things I heard. But the joy in that was not in what they were saying, but I know we're on a journey for them to find peace through all this, to get through this, to find peace within themselves, where this has been a block. You know, I'm a terrible person because this happened. Well, we're going to find peace. We're going to go to it. Place of peace where you're going to go to. I'm not going to assist you, but you're going to do the work. So it's joy.
How did you do that with people who have trauma from different things? Okay, so we've talked on a few things. So there's been abuse in various ways. Let's talk about addiction. I think pornography addiction is a big one. Mm-hmm. And infidelity. I don't know, but I'm sure there have been many cases that's been a challenge for people. What did you do? How did you take them from this mindset of I can't be anything, this happened to me and so this is how I am now and I just can't be anything else? How did you take them from that to being, oh my gosh, I have peace. I have joy in my life. I am beautiful. You gave an example of a woman who you said was kind of homely. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Can you share that with me again?
Her words were, I'm ugly.
No, I want you to share that story. And then I want to talk about how you took these people in your trainings. I mean, how long were your trainings?
The first segment was 4 days, and they were long days, 15 hours, something like that.
So you would take these people who started in this mindset, and then you got them, maybe not all of them, but there were probably plenty of examples of people who've gone through very traumatic, triggering things and got them to the point where they feel at peace and they feel prepared to make changes in their life to become more joyful and more full of peace.
Yeah, and let me preface this with this. When I say they came to peace, it was a snapshot of possibility. I mean, it was a moment. And the challenge of that even is it's a moment. And learning to feed that so that, because the other can come back. But first of all, what I would do is...
And it does. I feel like it does a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like it's always a challenge. You're I don't want to say fighting, but you're constantly needing to be aware and choosing this path, right?
Well, yeah. And when it does it, the little ego mind says, oh, look, it was all a bunch of crap. Don't buy into that. This is real life. Well, it's real life if you choose. But that was real life too. So what did it take to get to that point? First of all, it was honesty, getting honest and real about what's going on, not in denial and, oh yeah, it doesn't bother me anymore. Well, that's a bunch of crap with most people. They have buried it. but let's, you know, get real. And I will tell you, when we would get real, they would find out, yeah, it's not buried. It's buried, but it's not gone away. Get real, trust the process that we were going through. But it really was about getting honesty and real and going through a process of catharsis, which means purging, to realize that was dealing with them, but they are more powerful in that they can deal with it, and it will not devour them, it will not destroy them, it will not overtake them if they face it. They are far more powerful than whatever beliefs they had about themselves or whatever happened in that situation. But it was all experiential. It wasn't just theory and talking. It was experiential. So they would experience this. They would experience the pain. I mean, you know, we would have times where people were out and out. Their whole essence was crying. I mean, literally crying and weeping and feeling the pain and screaming. And it was all part of the process. But through that catharsis and then challenging them with experiences to assist them to see the power they have, that's basically what we did. It was all, you know, but it was experiential. You experience this. It's like, you know, somebody can tell you what a kiss feels like, but until you kiss, you don't know. It's just a theory. So somebody can say, you know, people have all kinds of theories. Oh, just let it go. Well, we don't just let it go. We bury it. I've let it all go. And, you know, how many people I heard say that? And it's like, yeah, we've met. We're going to find out.
So it's one of those, it's not letting it go. It's making peace with it, accepting it.
Well, it's being honest about it and real. And but people have a fear of that because no, that's too big. I mean, I'll take, you know, case, sexual abuse was very common, far more common in, you know, I traveled throughout the West. So Utah, California, Arizona, Washington, Idaho, Colorado, guess what? There's a common theme with a lot of people. They've been abused somehow. Now, it doesn't always mean sexual. It's a lot of abuse where they think, first of all, this is bigger than me. This is more powerful than me. I will never get over this. And nobody knows how I feel. Well, that's true. Nobody knows how you feel. The process was to, first of all, you got to get honest. You got to get real. Let's not pretend, you know, first of all, I'd say we've got 4 days. You can pretend the rest of your life, but for 4 days, get real and see what happens. You got to get real about it. Get real about the pain, not just talk about it, but really feel. And they would. I mean, I don't know if you could imagine. But believe me, when they're in that space, and let's say there's 100 people in a room in that space of feeling their pain, it's not happy in the sense of, oh, you know, we're at Disneyland. No, but there's joy because it's a process of getting through and knowing what can be on the other side. And that's joyful. So like with your kid, if your kid is screaming at you, you're not necessarily like, woohoo. But it's part of the process of learning, accepting this is part of the process of parenting. You know, though nobody had a manual on parenting. So, you know, you did the best you could.
I don't like that expression, but there's lots of books on parenting, but nobody.
There's no book on how to be a perfect parent.
There's nobody who can parent your child. There's no book. There's no manual that says this is how you should parent Emerald. Yeah. And this is how you should parent Grant. Like nobody's written that.
Right.
I'm figuring it out.
And the Love and Logic book, by the way, is really useful because it's not about really a how-to. It's ways of approaching things differently than we usually do. It's liberating in a way. You know, even in that specific case with your daughter. But anyway, going back to the other, it was a process. Basically, the main thing was getting real. Let's get real. We're going to get real and honest no matter how much that hurts. And you trust that you are powerful enough to deal with it. And it was fun. There was a lot of risk in it because, I mean, imagine you're in a room full of 100 people and you get up and you start talking about something that has been very guarded, very sensitive to you. And you got 100 people in that room you don't even know. But amazingly, they would have these huge breakthroughs that the biggest enemy of myself, the biggest judge of myself is me. I can share this story and they're not sitting there judging me because they're all in here with their own story that they're afraid of sharing. Now, I'm not saying you'd go on TV and share this. It's in an environment that is safe. It's a safe environment, but they realize their biggest enemy to themselves is themselves and their own beliefs that they, like if somebody was abused, a common belief is I'm dirty, I'm worthless, and I have no value. Well, is that true? Well, they don't know. So part of the process was to share, have them challenge them to experiences where they could actually see something different about themselves. Maybe you are. Maybe that's all true. Because you got to be, if you're open, it's like, yeah, that could be true. So let's find out. Well, how do you find out? They'd have chances to be in a situation where they could inspire people or discover themselves and their ability to step through their own fears and see themselves in a greater light.
Yes. Well, I think that was helpful. I think that being honest with ourselves. So we were kind of talking about self-love before and acceptance of ourselves. And I feel like that's a big thing. That's a big part of loving yourself is being honest about yourself. Being honest and saying, honestly, I'm not perfect. And honestly, I have all of these flaws. I'm insecure. I am not at the weight I want to be. I'm not the best mom. Like, you have to be real. And of course, you want to remember that they don't define you, right? But be real with the mistakes you've made. Be real with all the pieces of you, all the pieces that you feel like are rough or broken or whatever it is, whatever experiences have made you who you are, and say, I accept you and I love you. I love who you are. And this is a thing that I have had to do several times for myself, is just thinking about, so this might hurt my mother's feelings if she ever listens to this, but
if you had the power to do that, sure.
If I had the power to do that, thank you. Mom, I love you. I do. She and I have not always had the best relationships. And it's, I had to realize that that's been partially my fault for sure. But I had to sit back and look on the experiences I've had in my life as a child. And even there was a time when I was in an emotionally abusive relationship, that I had to realize, I had to accept the parts of me that were created when I was going through that experience. And the experiences that I've had have created who I am now. And I have to look at those, even the bad ones, even the ones that I didn't like, the ones that I wish would never happened, and say, this is what has made part of you. It's a part of you, and you will carry it, and that's okay. But you have to be able to accept those things and love yourself in spite of your flaws, and love yourself in spite of what has happened to you, right? And then that's when you're able to realize, wow, these things happened for me because they created part of who I am, right? Because,
well, assisted you, to me, they'd assist you to discover who you are.
Right.
Or you're already created.
Well, yes, yes. But they've assisted me in discovering who I am. And this whole life is about going on a journey, and every experience is supposed to help us further come into who we are, who we actually are, right? And that's, the name of this podcast is You Already Are. You're already all of the things that you want to be. You're just discovering it, right? And anyways, I've had to do this several times where I've had to look at the negative things that I've done or that I've experienced and say, this is how you've come to where you are now. And your life is beautiful, and you have beauty in your life that you're not seeing, and come to accept those bad pieces and realize that I am beautiful and I am worthy and I have infinite worth and potential, and those things helped me along the way, even if they were bad.
Yeah, this again goes back to forgiveness. And I will tell you this, when we are forgiving, we don't look at things we did as good or bad or positive or negative. We just see them as things we did, looking, and we were doing them because we wanted something. And we can see them from a neutral perspective, taking out the judgment of them, so we are more apt to be learning from them. I mean, if I judge something as bad, as much as I can say I'm being honest, I will want to avoid what I deem really, really, really bad. So I was thinking about this a moment ago too. When we get real with ourselves, I have found that human being will get real with themselves up until it's uncomfortable, then they'll stop. And that's why a coach can be very, very useful, because a coach will challenge a person to look deeper into themselves than they would on their own. I mean, I can say with myself, I'm looking very, very deep, but there's this part, ooh, I don't want to go there. And a coach will say, well, let's go there. That's why a coach is very, very useful. I'm not a big believer in that you have you for years and years and years have a coach. You have a coach, you learn, you go off, live your life. Then you come back and you go through some more and some more. But I think with that, a coach can get you on a journey in the direction you want to go that you might not do by yourself, because we don't like to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to ask you if you had any thoughts of something that our audience can do today that can get them on that path of joy and peace, specifically regarding whether it's forgiveness or self-love. Do you have any recommendations that they could do today to work on?
Simply, I would say a couple things. Like you started writing what you're grateful for. You know, look at the ambience in your home, and do you ever take 15 minutes even to put on some very soft or appealing music and just close your eyes and dream about what your life could be if it was an ideal life? 15 minutes sometimes is hard for some people to focus that long, and you go in and out, but do it. Basically, you got to feed that part of you that you want to know about yourself. But look at what your environment is. And when you find yourself in judgment of yourself and others, you can ask yourself, is that true? Like, oh, I did this, this was bad. Ask yourself, is that true? And don't automatically say yes and say, I don't know. Let me find out about myself. If I find myself hitting up against a belief that says I'm worthless, well, is that true? I don't know. And it's true, I don't know, because I never maybe experienced anything otherwise. So let's find out and create an experience for you, even if it seems very infinitesimal. Go do service for somebody where you feel worthwhile, because you give yourself a reference point of worth by being engaged in service. It's really, the path is simple. Part that makes it challenging is it's not easy, because we get lazy or we get distracted or other things. So just some simple steps.
Yeah. And I think, that being honest with ourselves, and also kind of viewing things as a curious observer. When somebody says something and you are offended, instead of fighting that offense, because we talked about, choosing not to be offended, because you can, but sometimes there are things that offend us, and we can stop ourselves and say, why is that offending me? Why do I feel hurt or attacked when somebody says that? And instead of attaching judgment to those feelings, kind of getting deep down into what it is and saying, okay, well, maybe you feel insecure right now. Okay, that's okay. Let's work on that, right? But don't judge it. Don't judge it. Just take the judgment out of it. Take judgment out of the actions that you do, out of the things people say, and see how that changes, and just view it as a curious observer. Like, it's interesting that I had that thought today. Why did I have that thought today?
So, in that, did I do something bad? Well, what is it I want? Does that fit into it? And that's the curious observer, the neutral observer. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was just this. Does it get me where I really want to go? And if the answer is no.
I like that. Setting that mind frame of your vision of, is this my vision? Am I progressing towards
because
my
the
vision?
More we're vision driven and we really start to embrace that vision, the less likely we are to do those things because we do them we're on autopilot. So it's a way of setting yourself on autopilot for the things that will get you the joy you want. And so it's not that you stop doing that, you do, but you do other things. Or like with your child, it's not that you stop putting your hand on her mouth, but you find other ways that
I choose the path that's going to give me the relationship that I want.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Michael. I feel like we've gotten a lot of great stuff in this podcast, and I've really loved hearing some of the experiences you've had in your trainings. I feel like it's been very helpful, and I think this will be helpful for a lot of people. So we want to thank our listeners for joining us today. And if you like today's podcast, go ahead and hit the subscribe button if you haven't already and share it with your family and friends, maybe someone who needs to hear what's on this podcast today. And follow us on Instagram and Facebook at You Already Are Podcast. And we'd love to hear from our listeners and any feedback you guys may have. And thank you for joining us on You Already Are. We'll catch you next time. Thank you for joining us on another episode of You Already Are. Remember, you already are everything you aspire to be. Continue this journey and embrace the beauty it brings. Create the life you desire and remember your infinite worth and infinite potential. Until next time, live as though you already are.